Okay, good morning, everybody. Thank you for coming. Hope everyone's having a good day and a good week. I'd like to thank our sponsors for the whole academic year. The Shirim are sponsored Le'ilu Nishmos, Brana Bas Bendit, and Zelig Ben Kalman. Very grateful for the sponsorship. And I was reminded to remind you, please to turn off your phones. Again, I say this every week, and there's always one particular phone, not the same one every week, a different one every week, that goes off. So please let's remember to do that. we spoke last week about prosbul, very much in Yana Diyoma on the issues of our times, because we're signing up next week a prosbul, soon be Rosh Hashanah, which basically says that even though the Torah says that the loans that we've made will be cancelled by the Shemitah year, we found a way around that. We've signed a document which has assigned our loans to the Beit Din, and because they now belong to the Beit Din, they won't be cancelled in Shemitah year. And we looked at the mechanism, how that works, whether it's an actual assignment or a verbal declaration. We looked at that in some depth last week. But I want to broaden the discussion now to the general concept, to get deeper and deeper into this as we go this week and next week. How does that work? Why should it be okay to involve a to utilize a, what's called a ha'arama? Ha'arama is cunning or guile. We'll have to find a good English word to use, because these words all have connotations in different ways, but some clever, almost legalistic way, something that people often call a loophole, although next week I'll show you, I think that that's not what a loophole is, and there aren't any loopholes in halacha. I think we use the word loophole in a very loose way, but as a lawyer I'd like to use it in a tighter way, but that's next week, please God. But why should it be okay to do that? Why isn't it something which is sneaky in some way, which leaves a negative ring in our ears? And I brought you on the first page, why do so many people find ha'arama problematic? So let's try and express why that might be. Sometimes people say, well, it feels like we're playing games. Is this real or is this not real? How can you, like I mentioned the story last week of the rabbi and the priest, where the rabbi was excited about mezonos bread that he didn't have to wash and he didn't have to bench, and we get very excited about that. And the priest said, like, I don't know what you're doing. Are you playing games with the mitzvahs that God gave you? It seems that we're trying to find a ways to avoid mitzvahs. Is that right? Is that cheating? Are we favoring the technical law over the spirit of the law? A ha'arama seems to take something very literally and legalistically, when we all know what it means, but somehow or other you found a way around it. I mentioned last week Shylock, classic situation in The Merchant of Venice, where he wants his pound of flesh, but Portia comes along and says, well, I'm going to save the day by saying you never say anything about blood, meaning you can have your pound of flesh, but you've no right to spill one drop of Christian blood. So what is she doing? She's using a ha'arama. She's out-Jewing the Jew. That's how that's working there. She's using his tool against him, and you're saying, see, we can also do that, which is very interesting, but negative in that sense. It looks as though it's favoring the external over the internal, which is not what we're all about. And of course, we've been influenced by Christian polemics. The Christian thinking was very much against legalism and literal taking of the law. I brought you even a reference there. Luke, if you're interested in whether the main polemic against that is, but there's also a frustration. Some people say, okay, so the rabbis are very clever, they find all sorts of ways of getting around things. You can sell your chometz, you can make a prosbul, you can do this. So if they can find ways to do things that help people, so why don't they help people in this place or in that place? Classically, this is used, I think, incorrectly, but maybe honestly, but incorrectly, in the situation of aguna. If the rabbis can find workarounds here, 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 and here, obviously that feeds into the narrative, which again we'll talk about next week, which is not correct, which is quotes, the famous quote of Blue Greenberg, although she said later she didn't mean it like that, but whatever, where there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. So obviously the rabbis can do whatever they really want to do, so if they're not helping, it's because they don't care. They could if they wanted to. Now we'll see that is not true. That is a misrepresentation of the specific issue, although it's not completely untrue in every sense. But we'll talk about that next week. What I want to do is dive deeper and deeper into this topic. Let's first of all today equip ourselves with a bunch of different examples of ha'arama. Where do we see this in the text? Where do we see this in the Gemara? And we'll see that sometimes the Gemara says, yes, you can do this. But in other situations, the Gemara says, no way, you can't do that. You're just trying to cheat. So what we have to do today is try to find patterns as we're listening to these cases. Well, why yes in that case, but no in that case? What is it about this case of Haroma that makes it okay, but that case of Haroma that makes it prohibited? And we'll see if we can find patterns there. Yes? We'll get to the term in a minute. We'll get to the term in a second. Yes? Maybe we'll see. I mean, can you call all of these things Haroma? Someone has a mobility unit that they can drive, and it works on a Groma switch, and it's got a big sign on the back saying, this is a Shomer Shabbos, whatever they call them, okay? Kalnoit, I think they call them in Hebrew, right? Like something that moves. What are you doing? How does that work? Is that real? You're playing because the electricity kicks in a few seconds later. That makes it okay. Maybe that's also part of it. But what I'd like to do with you today is give you some core information. Then at the end of the show, we'll try and see if we can see some patterns as flagged by the Rishonim. And then next week, we'll take a deeper dive and look at the more modern analysis of this in terms of what is the spirit of the law, what are the reasons for the law, do we ever know why we do anything? And one of the classic cases which the Gemara brings for that is Tekiyah Shofar, which is why next week I think that's a lovely segue into Rosh Hashanah, because we'll see if it fits right into this topic. But you ask about the term, so let's start with that question. I thought of your question, I put it on the sheet. Let's first of all look at where we see this term Arum. And if you ask somebody what does Arum mean, they'll probably say it means you've got no clothes on. Which is true, which is actually interesting. And the first time that we see the word Arum, Arumim, is with Adam and Chava, where they have no clothes on in Gan Eden. But that's okay. Lo Yid Bashashu. There's no problem with that. I'm not getting into that right now. That's an interesting topic in the whole idea of Tzniut and Gan Eden, how that works. But the very next Pasuk, at the beginning of chapter 3 of Bereishis, there's this play on words where it says in number 1, V'hanachash haya arum mikol chayat asadeh. And there it's definitely not positive. The snake was sneaky. Sly. And these are all words which are negative in connotation. But of course there are words which are less negative or more ambiguous. What about clever? Clever could go either way. It could be, oh, you're so clever, or you're so clever. You know, in the tone of voice, it can go with, what about cunning? Usually bad. What about shrewd? Shrewd is usually quite good. Now, in English, we have to try and find the right words to express this, but here Arum is clearly negative. In Shemot, no question number 2. Ki yazed ish al riehu lahargo, when a person kills another person on purpose, ba'arma. It, with slyness, they plan it. It's premeditated. That's the worst of all. Meaning it's worse even than a crime of passion. It's premeditated. But Orma, clearly negative. I brought Eov here. He uses the word Arumim and Ba'ormam, clearly in a negative connotation. However, if you get into Mishle, you see in Mishle, and to some degree in Tehillim as well, books of wisdom, the wisdom literature in Tanakh, Arum is less negative, and in fact, in Mishle is usually positive. Have a look. Let's start the whole of Sefer Mishle, top of page 2, with source number 4. Mishle begins the following. Mishle Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. Not getting into a story of who wrote Mishle and who didn't write Mishle. It's attributed to Shlomo ben David Melech Yisrael. What's Mishle for? Lada'at Chochma Umusa. Okay, that's great, no? To understand wisdom and direction. Lahavin Imre Bina. Chochma, Bina, Das, all these things. Lekachat Mutha Haskel, to learn common sense, good messages. Tzedek, Umishvat, Umisharim, straightness, truth, justice. Latet Lebetaim Orma. It will give to the foolish, which is not good, a little bit of Orma, a little bit of nous, shrewdness, meaning people won't be naive anymore. Orma's good there. What's that? Street sense, maybe? Ula na'ar. Na'ar is never usually a positive, like na'arishkeit in the Yiddish. To the young, foolish person, dat umazima. Now, mazima is also an interesting word, which is sometimes used positively, but sometimes used negatively. But here, it kind of means a certain shrewdness. And I brought you other psukim here, in number 5, from Mishle, also, where it uses the word arum and mirma, in one sense positively for arum, and in another sense negatively for mirma. Now, they're the same root, basically. But remember that sometimes it's a positive, sometimes it's a negative. We'll get to the Rambam when we get there soon. Shaul HaMelech describes David when he's always on the run and they can never find him. He's always, once they, you know, they think he's here, they look for him and he's already gone and hid somewhere else. So he says to his men, you've got to be ahead of this guy because Arum Ya'arimhu. He's a real sneaky one. But again, Shaul is saying it negatively about David. But on the other hand, this is a quality that David is using not to cheat anybody, but to save his life, to stop himself being murdered. He's got a certain shrewdness and cunning which is keeping him alive. So there is a positive connotation to Arum, but sometimes even the word Mirma, which can be negative, is unclear, debatable. Look at these classic cases in Chumash. Number 7. Vayomer ba'achicha b'mirma v'yikach birchasecha. Classic line. Yitzchak realizes that the person who took the bracha is Esav. Yeah. It was Yaakov. Is Yaakov? Excuse me. Correct. He's Yaakov. Thank you. And he shakes and he shudders and he realizes he's been duped, and then he says to Esav, "Your brother came b'mirma and took your brocha away." What does b'mirma mean? So Rashi says, like the Unklus, b'chochma. He was wise. How? Why is this positive? Because Yitzchak says, and he will be blessed. Baruch Hu. Meaning he doesn't take away his brocha. He seems to uphold the brocha he gave unwittingly to Yaakov. But Mirma, Rashi says, is chochma. That's not a bad thing. However, the Ibn Ezra says, Sheloi dibe emes. He didn't tell the truth. That's not good. So, and by the way, if it's not good, why is Yitzchak saying this to Esav? What's he achieving? Isn't this like Lashon Hara? I mean, what does he achieve by saying, you know something, your brother stole your brocha. Go and get him. Maybe he realizes that that's the role of Esav, to be Soneh Yisrael, and he's G'ing him up for this role. Okay, that's another discussion. But that's an interesting, unclear connotation. Look at the other example, Shechem, with Dina. Remember, Dina is kidnapped by Shechem. She's raped by Shechem. And then the brothers come along, number 10. V'yanu b'nei Yaakov es Shechem es chamor aviv b'mirma. They responded with mirma. V'yidaberu asher timei es Dina achotam. Okay, they spoke to them and they raped the sister Dina. What does it mean, b'mirma? So Rashi again, b'chochma. Now, here I think we've got a little bit more sympathy with the brothers of course, what did they say? They said, well, of course you can marry our sister, but you just have to have a bris mila and everything will be good. But of course it was all a trick to get them weak, etc. So Rashi says again, b'chochma, the redak, and I brought you here, Rav Avram ben Aramban, they said, no, they lied to them, but justifiably. Of course justifiably. Yaakov is more of a question. Was it justified or not justified? Maybe yes, because Rivka had told him that she'd spoken to God and God said he should have the bracha. Okay, but with the brothers of Shechem, I think we have a lot of sympathy that why should they be truthful, the brothers of Dina rather, why should they be truthful with Shechem and Chamor when these people are kidnappers and rapists? You have to be honest with people who are trying to kill you and cheat you. Somebody breaks into your house and says, where'd you keep your jewels? You have some kind of a halachic obligation to tell the truth? Of course not. So maybe it means that they did lie, and they were right to lie. But again, there's this debate as to whether mirma is good or mirma is bad. So, or it may be justified, but nevertheless negative in connotation. So I brought you this psukim as an introduction. So we see that root in Tanakh. But Chazal used that root, and we're going to see that right now in a few different cases, very specifically to talk about when you use a legal mechanism, which is a little bit tricky. And again, sometimes they say it's okay, and sometimes they say it's not. So what we're going to have to do now is take a roller coaster ride through 12 or so different sugyot in Chazal. You have to hold on tight because it's going to be fast and furious. But we're going to see a lot of different things, some of which we're not so familiar with, some of which we're more familiar with.
What's the name that Arum has an I in it?
Okay, so that gets good. So that gets back to the question as to what are the is Hebrew a three-letter root? Is Hebrew a two-letter root? How does it go? Can you have metathesis where the letters flip around? You know, a keves and a kesev is the same thing. So is Arum and Mir the same? I'm not getting into that. You can speak to etymologists. You can speak to people who get excited by grammatical things, of which I'm not such a bocky. But clearly they are related words.
Whether there's no iron at all.
There's no iron at all. Good. But again, does there have to be an iron in the root or not? Is it two or is it three letters? Okay, that's not for now. Let's go into number 14. Bechor. What's a bechor? Okay, so a bechor is a firstborn male kosher domesticated animal. And back in the day, the rule was, who gets the bechor? The kohen. So if your bechor is born unblemished, so the kohen can come along and say, okay, That's my animal. We're going to take it. We're going to offer it as a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. It's going to be a big simcha. And if the bechor got a blemish, so the kohen can still take it. It's the property of the bechor. But then he eats it as a regular animal, but not bring it as an offering in the temple. Either way, it belongs to the kohen. So comes along a farmer and says, you know something? I'm not so excited about a kohen taking every one of my firstborn animals. I don't really like that. What can I do? Is there any way I can avoid that? Apparently not. Look in number 14. The pasuk says, "Ach bechor asher yivukar laHashem bebehema." Any animal you have which is a firstborn animal, lo yekdish ishoto. You, as an individual owner, you may not declare this as your korban. It doesn't belong to you. Imshor, whether it's an ox, imser, laHashem, it belongs to God. It's already pre-designated. The bechor belongs to the kohen. Live with it. There's nothing you can do. Well, maybe not nothing. Comes along the Mishnah. There are two cases where the Mishnah uses the word ha'arama. Two cases. We're going to look at them both. Number 15. Ketzad ma'arimim al bechor. How do you... And again, we're going to have to work out how to translate this. I don't like the word cheat. How do you...
Get around.
Okay, let's... Okay, we're not going to start singing songs from the 60s, but okay, fine. How do you get around the bechor situation? Okay, this is how you do it, says the Mishnah. You have a female animal who has never given birth before, and you know she's going to have, you don't know if it's a male or a female, but you know it's going to be one or the other. So what the farmer can say is as follows. Whatever is in the uterus, in the womb of this animal, im zachar, if it's a firstborn male, oila, then I'm taking it, I'm making it into an ola. Then Yalda Zachar, Yakrib Oila. And then if it gives birth to a male, then it's not a Bechor. You've pre-designated. You've got there ahead of the Kohen, because we'll see Rambam says in a minute, that when does it become a firstborn? When it's born. That's pretty obvious, and that we learn from a Pasuk. Only when it's born, it can be a firstborn. If you get there ahead of the game, and you designate it in the womb, and say, if you're a male, then you're mine, then it's yours. Then you pre-birth. The imna keva, if it's a female, now this obviously is talking about bechor, because there is no female bechor, but it's other kinds of animals. Zivchei shlamim, then I want to make it a shlamim. So then, yaldan keva, if it has a female, takriv shlamim, then you can bring it as a shlamim. And if he wants to hedge his bet, and he says, im zachar oila, the imna keva, zivchei shlamim, if it's a male, then an oila, then a female, then a shlamim, then if it has twins, Yalda Zacha Unakeva, then a Zacha Yakriv Oilav and a Keva Takriv Shlamim. You can get around the Bechor. You just have to get in there a little bit earlier before the animal is born. Okay, why would you want to do that? Well, in this particular case, clearly there's a Beis HaMikdash, and you want to find a way of bringing your own sacrifice. You're not trying to avoid Kodshim. You want this animal to be a sacrificial animal, but you're saying, you know something? The Kohen gets plenty. I don't get a chance to bring that many Korbanos. I'd like this to be my Korban. Apparently, the Mishnah says, that's okay. You can do that if you want. Nothing wrong with that. He doesn't even say it's b'dieved. It says, how do you do it? He's teaching you how to do it. Yes?
In that case, if there's a blemish, what happens?
If there's a blemish, then it's not going to be... if there's a blemish, then it'll be a blemished oila, which you'll be able to redeem, and then use the animal, and the money will be kodshim, etc. You'll be able to redeem it like any other blemished korban. Okay, but it'll still be yours. It won't be a blemish bechor. Okay, number 16. The Gemara goes one stage further. Now, the Gemara is already talking after there's no Beis HaMikdash anymore. So there is no opportunity to bring it as a korban. Look what the Gemara says. Amar Rav Yehuda, Mutzal lahatil mumba bechor kodim sheyatza la'avir ha'olam. You, if you know what you're doing, you can even blemish the animal a little bit before it's fully born. Now, what does that mean, before it's fully born? When is an animal born? When is a human being, lahavdil, born? We talked about this when we talked about abortion not so long ago. When the majority of the head, or the majority of the body, if it's the other way around, has come out. But if you get in there at the birth, says the Gemara, and you make a little blemish, it doesn't have to be a major, major thing on the ear, let's say, of the animal, before it's halakhically born, then there you are. It's a blemished animal, it's not going to be a korban at all. Then you can do that. Tznan, Oima Adam, you can, now the Gemara says, really, you can do that? Tznan, we said in the Mishnah, Oima Adam, Masheb, Meir, Shelzu, Oila, Oila in, Shlamim, La. The Mishnah says you can designate it as a korban, this kind of korban, not that kind of korban. The Atama, the Matzis, Mim, Mafkias, Lei, Mim, Kedushata, and you're telling me you can take it from being Kodshim completely, you can blemish it, prevent it from being any korban, meaning the Mishnah says you can switch around what korban it is, maybe. But you've taken it from being a... You can't offer this as a korban at all. How do you allow this? Amlecha Rav Yehuda would turn around to you and say, calm down. Hani mili bizman shebeis hamikdash kai. When there was a Beis HaMikdash, then the Mishnah said I could redesignate it as a korban. But kikamina ana, when I gave you this law of blemishing it, bizman hazeh, it's these days, v'lechazeh lahakrava. I can't bring it as a korban anyway. So what harm am I doing? It can never be a korban.
Why would he blemish it?
I'll tell you why he would blemish it. Because if it's a blemished bechor, then it could be killed, okay, and eaten. But if it's not blemished, you can't bring it as a korban, but then it's running around the farm, like owning the place. There's nothing you can do with it. And what's the danger? And he will come to the Tosfos right now. The danger is, actually there's a downside if I have a real korban running around my farm, which has all sorts of restrictive halachot. I can't work it, I can't shear it, I can't eat it, I can't... And there's no Beis HaMikdash to bring it. I don't want that in my farm, thank you very much. I don't want that. If you remember when we talked about surrogacy, the farmer, the Gemara there in Chulin even said, if a really clever farmer knows what to do, he can, remember this case? He can back up two cows, one against the other, okay? And it can be born from one cow and go up into the other cow, which is not pregnant, and come out again. He's all finding all sorts of ways of how to get around this problem of having a Bechor running around his farm, or too many Bechorot. And we said, that's a strange case. And remember, I showed you Tosfos there. Tosfos says, there are some weird Gemaras, but this must be the weirdest of all. It doesn't work. They knew more about cows than you and I will ever know. You can't get a newborn calf into the uterus of a non-pregnant female. Don't try it, please. You'll end up in jail or in hospital or in both, okay? But so says Tosfos, so why is this there? No idea. Because you can't possibly take one fetus and re-implant it into the womb of another mother. So why would the Gemara discuss a case which involves re-implantation of fetuses? It doesn't say it exactly that. Okay, so now this is a key source, because now we can do that. We talked about that. But that all revolved around the Bechor as well. Tosfos says we've got an even better idea now. We don't even know how to do this little blemish thing now. So what do we do now? Number 17. The Amar Rabbeinu Tam, the Hashda Nago Ha'olam. This is what we do today. Limkor Ktsatz Min Ha'em. You sell a little bit of the mother while it's still pregnant. Kedei LaHavkia HaVlad Min HaBechorah. To completely make it into a non-Bechor. So then the mother is owned by a Jew and a non-Jew. No Bechor. V'toivu La'asot Kain. It's great to do that. It's a good thing to do. U'bodat She'yakne Lo Kinyan Chashuv. As long as you make a proper kinyan, you lift up the animal, you get the non-Jew to lift it up, or mashiach of a kinyan kesef, whatever it is, you have to do a proper, you can't mess it up, you can't pretend, you have to sell it, but it's good to sell it. But selling the mother to a non-Jew, or partly to a non-Jew, has got around the problem of bechor. But that's a good thing. Why is that a good thing? Why is it not a haroma? So it sounds pretty clear that there's a real downside of having Bechor today. So actually, you've somewhat saved the day. This Ha'arama has actually saved you. We'll see the Shulchan Aruch says it's a mitzvah to do this, because actually we don't want Bechorot today. It's actually negative, not positive. So here's an example of a Ha'arama, which is a bit sneaky. It's a workaround, but it's actually to the general benefit of the whole situation. And we'll see that's maybe a theme that we're getting into soon. Just let me bring you one Rambam before we get into another case. The Rambam very helpfully says at the bottom, number 18, Hatachbula hamuteret nikret ha'arama. When the Gemara or the Tosefta or the Mishnah wants to say a workaround which is okay, it calls it ha'arama. V'she'enu muteret, and when it's something which is not okay, mirma. It calls it a mirma. Which is a different word. As the gentleman was saying over there, it is a different word. So it's not a 100% foolproof case, but the Rambam says, generally speaking, when it's okay, it's called Haroma. When it's not okay, it's called Mirma. We'll see as we go through. Tosfos Yontov asks, the Mirma is not always negative, but I'm not getting into that now. Masa Sheni. Here's another case. Ladies and gentlemen, what is Masa Sheni? When you have produce that grows in Eretz Yisrael. So first of all, you take some and you give it to a Kohen. Then you take some and you take 10% of what's left and give it to a Levi. That's Maaser Rishon. Then you give 10% of what's left and you take it yourself to the Yerushalayim, to the Beis HaMikdash, and you eat it there. It has to be eaten b'tahara, in purity, in the Mikdash. So what if you live a long way from the Beis HaMikdash? Look at number 20. Says, just a couple of weeks ago we had it in the Parsha. V'chiyir b'mimcha aderech. If you live a long way away, says the Torah. Ki lo tuchal seito. You can't carry all the fruit there. Ki yirchak mimcha amakom. It's too far away. Asher yivcha Hashem elokecha l'asum shmosham. The place where the Beis HaMikdash is, Yerushalayim, is a long way away. You live in the Golan Heights. Why do you live so far away?
Ki yivarechacha Hashem Elokecha.
Baruch Hashem, it's a bracha. Jews are living all around Israel, in the Negev, in the Golan. It's a wonderful thing. It's not a bad thing. It's a great thing that you live so far away. Don't feel bad about it. So what should you do? You should get some money, put the money in your hand, and you should redeem the Ma'aser Sheni on the money. And you take the money to the place, the money you can take. You can spend the money on whatever you want there. Have a party in Yerushalayim, have a banquet. Wine and beer and liquor and meat and all lovely things. Whatever you want to spend it on. Take the money, be happy, take the money and spend it in Yerushalayim. But there's a qualification, number 21, says, v'im ga'al yig'al, if you redeem your masa onto money, chamishito yosef alav, you have to add a fifth. There's a little bit of a tax on this. If you take the fruit up as fruit, you just take the fruit. But if you redeem it onto a coin, you have to add a fifth. Now, for reasons that I'm not getting into in great detail, when the Gemara says a fifth, well, the Gemara understands the Torah saying a fifth, it actually means a fifth of the final product. So if you have 100%, you add 25%, and then 25 out of 125 is a fifth. That's how it works. So it always, in the way we think in today's maths, it kind of goes down one. A fifth is what you and I call a quarter. A quarter of a is what you and I call a third. So a fifth is 25%. Okay? Rav Hirsch has a whole elaborate explanation as to why Chazal see it that way, but I'm not getting into that now. Okay? So you have to add a fifth. Beseda, that could be quite a lot of money, though. If you had a lot of fruit, and you're going to take it to Yerushalayim, you have to add a fifth, 25%. It's really a quarter of the project, of the value, that's not so great. So says the Mishnah, number 22, Ma'arimim al-Ma'aser Sheni. You have a workaround. Here's a haroma. What could you do? Kate said, how does it work? You can say to your grown-up kids, have your kids around for Shabbos, or don't do it on Shabbos, but during the week, have your kids around. Your Hebrew Eved, or your Hebrew Shivcha, okay, your Am Ivriya. And you say, hey, look, ma'as elu upadelecha ma'as esheni zeh. You take the money and redeem it on the property, on the food. And what does that mean? And what does that help? It's not their fruit. So they don't have to add the fifth. So you say, thank you very much. If I redeem it, I have to add a fifth. But if you redeem it for me, shkayach, then I don't have to add the fifth. And I can get away without adding the fifth. Says the ma'as esheni. Yeah, shkayach, you found a workaround. That works.
How come they don't have to?
It's not it's not their money, it's not their fruit. This is your kids. Your kids just happen to be redeeming it with money. You'll give them money, they'll redeem it, they'll give you the money back, and everything's happy. Okay? And the Gemara says, that's actually, the Yerushalmi actually says, that's part of the bracha. The Yerushalmi even understands, that's what it means. God's given you a bracha. You live so far away, the bracha is, you get a discount. If you're clever and you know how to do it right, then this is an extra level of bracha in the Ma'aser Sheni. Again, there doesn't seem to be anything negative about that at all. Seems to be saying, this you can do, no problem, don't feel guilty, it's absolutely fine. Okay, interesting. Let's go on. Again, you have to store these cases in your mind. These are the cases which are okay, we'll soon see which is not okay. Beitza, you want some meat for Yontif. Now, there's a problem. If you have a cow and you have a few guests around Yontif, you can shecht your cow on Yontif. But the problem is, you get way too much meat and you don't need all that meat. And what are you going to do with it? So you and I are going to say, well, we're going to put it in the freezer. But there's no freezer. So it's going to be an enormous loss of money. Now, in the non-Jewish world, what did they do? They chopped pieces off live animals. That's how they did it. They chop a leg off, the bottom of the leg, the top of the leg, and the animal will gradually kind of fall apart until eventually die. That's called Eva Minachai. But that was an actual practice for real economic reasons. Because if I shech the whole cow, I'm going to waste the meat. So what should you do? You can't do that. Obviously, you wouldn't want to. How can you deal with it? Says number 24, the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Moleach Adam kama chatichas basa bavasa achas. Afal pi she'ein sarich elele chaticha achas. I'm going to give you a heter, he says. You can shech the cow, you can eat the meat and cook the meat that you want, and what can you do with the rest of the meat? Salt it. That's a lot of work. And there's a question mark, a halachic issue of salting. on Yom Tov or Shabbos, because salting is a little bit like ma'abed. It's not technically ma'abed. Ma'abed is preserving, like the hides, etc. So salting is a little bit iffy, and it's going to take you hours and hours and hours on Chag to salt the meat. But if you don't allow somebody to do this, they're not going to shecht. And they're going to say, you know something, I'll eat broccoli, it'll be fine. What do you mean you'll eat broccoli? V'samachta b'chagecha. Yeah, but I don't want to waste the whole cow. Okay, you can salt the meat. Don't worry about it, you can salt the meat. Rav Adabar Ahava says, no, you can't just do that. Says the following, ma'arim. You have to use a ha'aroma. Umalach garma. You salt it piece by piece. So what does that mean? Rashi says, la'acha shemalach zo, la'achli. You take one piece and you salt it to eat. Hayom, today, which is you're allowed to do. Omer, then the person, you, the person eating the food, says, ooh, chaver tamar be'alai la'ach la'yom. I actually prefer that piece. So let me salt that piece. I have that piece. V'chayze umalcha, and then you salt that piece. And then you say, you know something? That piece is actually even nicer. I'm going to salt that piece. And that way, you only ever salt one at a time, but you end up salting the whole lot because you keep changing your mind. Which is a ha'aroma. Now the question here is, why do I even need the ha'aroma? Meaning the other shita, Rav Yehuda says, it's fine, just do it. Salt it, you're allowed, it's a heter. Because we want you to be able to share cows. And yet Rav Adabar Ava turns around and says, I'm not prepared to permit it, but I am prepared to let you use a ha'aroma. It's almost like a chumrah, the ha'aroma. It's a stringency. The question is, what does it add? Who are you trying to kid? Is that, why is that better? Why is it better that you do it in a way which, just do it. If he says you can do it, just do it. No, you have to use this clever workaround. Okay, interesting. Next case. Again, I want you to keep thinking. The difference is that in your mind, you're kind of pretending that you only wanted this one piece, so you're not salting all the pieces, but you keep doing this again. In the long run, there is no difference. You end up spending the same 4 hours salting the same meat, but in one case you just did it because you said the rabbi says it's okay, and in the other case you did it piece by piece by piece by piece. Okay, next case. This is a real problem. Well, top of page 5, 25. You've got two cows, a mother cow and a child cow. And on Yom Tov, they both fall down a pit. Oy va'avoy. What am I going to do? Meaning the cows are muksa. I can't just haul them out of a pit. On a Tuesday, I just haul them out of the pit. But the cows are muksa. Why? When am I allowed to move a cow on Yom Tov? If I'm going to shecht it and eat it. Okay, so I'll shecht both. You can't. Why not? You know, you can't shecht the mother cow and the child cow on the same day. So I'm a bit stuck. Because whichever one I bring up, that one I can bring, but the other one I can't touch. Because what could I possibly do with it? I'm not allowed to shecht it if I'm already doing the mother or the child, whichever way it is. Number 25. The rabbis think of every possible scenario. It's amazing. The mother and the child cow fell into a pit on Yom Tov. Rebbe Lezer says, Oimer, Ma'ale Esarishin, Almanas L'Shechta V'Shechta. You can bring up the first one, whichever it is, and shecht it. That's fine. The Hasheni Oisel Parnasa. But the second one you can't bring up. I'm sorry. You just have to push food down. You have to hope for the best. Hope it makes it through Yom Tov. You know, drop a bit of food down, it'll eat it. And we'll come into its place, Bishvil Shalom Yomas, to try not to let it die. But you can't bring it up. How can you bring it up? What are you bringing it for? You can't shecht it. Rabbi Yeshua says, no. Male is a rishon almanas l'shechta. You bring up the first one to say, this is the one I'm going to shecht. The ain't a shechta, but you don't shecht it. And you say, you know, I changed my mind. Umarim, umale es hasheni. I'd rather have that one. And you bring up the second one. And then when you've got them both in front of you, ratza shelo lishchayt echad mehem, harushus b'yado. And now if you choose not to shecht one, because of course you can't shecht both, then that's fine. The Yerushalmi even says, you know something? You don't have to shecht either of them. I changed my mind again. I prefer broccoli. Okay, I have no problem with broccoli, you just should know. I don't want letters from the broccoli manufacturers, you know, whatever. The point is that it's okay. Let me ask you, why do you need to do this? Why not give a heter? Tsar Bale Chaim. You know, I give you a heter, Tsar Bale Chaim, you can bring up both animals. No. Rabbi Eliezer says, first of all, Tsar Bale Chaim doesn't allow you to bring up the animal. You have to push the food down. And Rabbi Yeshua says, you can bring it up, but only through a mirma. Why? At a harama, rather. Why did that work? But it does work. Interesting. So we've had four cases. We've had the Bechor case, we've had the Maaseh Sheni case, we've had the meat salting case, and we've had the two cows in the pit case, and they're all okay. That's okay. Now I'll give you four cases which are not okay. And you'll have to see if you can work out why yes there and why no here. Look at number 26. This is Eruv Tavshilin. How does this work? You know full well, if Yontif comes immediately before Shabbos, normally you're not allowed to cook on Yontif for Shabbat. You can only cook on Yontif for Yontif. But if you make an Eruv Tavshilin before Yontif, you're beginning the preparation of cooking for Shabbat. Then Chazal said you can continue that cooking on Yontif for Shabbat, but you have to have an Eruv. Because it's an Issad Rabbanon, it's not an Issad Oraisa. And Chazal said you can do it if you make this Eruv. Now, what happens if you forgot to make an Eruv? What happens if you made an Eruv, but by mistake you ate the Eruv on the night of Yontif? That happens, no? And then in the morning you say, okay, let's get ready for Shabbos. Where's the Eruv? Oyvei, we just ate it for dinner. Says the Gemara, number 26, Tashma. Misheniach Eruv Tavshilin. Someone who makes an Eruv properly, harizeh oivim avashel umatzmin. You can do all these things on Chag for Shabbat. You can cook, you can bake, etc. The imratzel echol es eruvah. If you want to eat your Eruv, harishus biyana, then eat it. But, you know, do yourself a favor, eat it on Shabbos. The minhag is to eat it at Sudash Dishit for Shabbat. But really, you could eat it any time on Shabbat, because once Shabbat's come in, there's no more cooking to be done. So, but don't eat it till Shabbat. But you can eat it whenever you want. Achla at shaloi afa, but what happens if you ate it too soon before you baked, or at shaloi it's me before you wrap the food? Haris eloi afa, then you're stuck. I'm sorry, you can't cook. Veloi vashel, veloi yatzmin, you can't do anything. Loi loi, veloi achirim, you can't do it. You can't get others to do it. Veloi achirim oifim bishvilan bishviloi, you can't get others to do it for you. Oh, can you be my kind of yontif goy and cook for me because I ate my eruv? No, you're stuck. You have to just cook for Yontif. If there's a bit extra, you know, you cook a pot for Yontif, you lost your Erev. If there's a little bit of leftovers, then okay, that's good for Shabbos. Ubilvad shalo yarim, but don't try and cheat. Don't cook extra pots and say, ooh, these are for Yontif in case guests come. No. Ve'im harim, if you try and cheat, asur. It's all osa. You messed it up big time. You can't cheat. Why can't you cheat? So Rashi says, it's not like the case of the meat. Because in the case of the meat, it's a fairly low-level issa. And they want you to be able to have Simchas Yontif. In the case of the Eruv, it's a very serious Aveira. You want to cook on Yontif for Yontif, but it's really for Shabbos. And whose fault is it that you don't have an Eruv? It's your fault. We'll see later. You're negligent. You shouldn't have eaten your Erev. Or you forgot to make an Erev. Look at the Shulchan Aruch. Amazing case, number 28. Im Avra b'mezid, if before Yontif came in, you consciously, purposely says, I think the whole Erev thing is ridiculous. I'm not going to make one. I don't like it. Or b'shogig, or you just forgot to make an Erev. U'bishol kamakidere shaloi l'tzerich Yontif, and then on Yontif you cook things which are not for Yontif at all. You can eat them on Shabbos. You're a naughty boy or a naughty girl. You shouldn't have done that. You need to do tshuva. You need to think harder next time. But if you actually cook the things because you know you forgot, or you forgot before, or you didn't care before, then it's okay. You can eat them on Shabbos. However, the second line, the imherim, but if you cheated or you tried to cheat, levashel beis kedayos l'tzarech hayom, and you cooked two different dishes for today, but really once for tomorrow, you're not allowed to eat it. Are you serious? The guy who on purpose didn't make an Eruv, and he cooks on Yontif, because I don't care, okay, then he does Shiva, okay, I can eat down Shabbos. But the guy who tries to cheat, no. You're worse than even the one who did it on purpose. Here it seems to be very negative. There's no cheating in Judaism. It's not okay. Look at the Mishnah Berurah number 29 on the top. Because we worry that other people will learn your sneaky ways, and then they'll do that. And you'll do it again. Why? Because you think, oh, this is clever, I can just cheat. It's not a problem. Meaning, we're not worried, someone who did it on purpose and then they did tshuva, they'll say, oh, you know something, I've done tshuva, now I'm not going to do that again. But someone who sneakily thinks it's okay, you get into habits of thinking that there's no problem with it. And it's going to make your mind all twisted and you're not going to do it right. I brought you a Rambam there. I'm not going to go through it all now. If we have time at the end, which we won't, we'll look at it at the end. But in Hilchos Tshuva, he says there are certain Averas that a person finds it hard to do Tshuva because they don't even see that it's a problem anymore. They don't really understand that there's anything. They've justified in their mind. He gives a few cases. He says, for example, one case is you eat a meal at somebody who doesn't have very much money, but they invited you for dinner. You should have realized that they don't really have enough money to feed you properly, but you asked for seconds. And you said, well, he was offering the food, like, what's the problem? I didn't steal it. No, you that's an aveira. You ate from somebody who didn't have the money. Or somebody who looks at women inappropriately. And he says, well, I never touch them. I just look. I don't touch. And you think, well, what's wrong with that? I didn't upset anybody. The answer is no, that's still a serious aveira. Or somebody, he says here, who suspects other people of doing averas, but they never accuse them. And they say, well, I never said anything. I never upset them. I just thought in my mind. No, that's also an aveira. So it's things where you kind of twist your mind into a way of thinking that it's okay. It's not okay, and it's very hard to do tshuva. So you see the Eruv Tavshilin case. No cheating. Look at number 31. But I'm a Rabbi Barachana, I'm a Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Bar Eloi. Bara'e, look at the situation we're in. He says, Shaloi Kedoros HaRishonim Doros HaAchronim. The earlier generations are much better than the later generations. What? How? Doros HaRishonim HaYomachnisim Periseim Derech Traxamon. What's going on here? Your fruit and vegetables only becomes obligated in Trumas and Maestras if you bring it through the house, through the garden, through the front yard in the normal way. That's a pasuk. However, that's what the early generations did. Kedei lechayvim b'mas, because they wanted to give their taxes. They wanted to pay their trumas and maaseros. But doros achronim, but the later generations, machnisim periseim derech gagos. They found a workaround. They bring in the fruit through the roof. And you say, aha, now it's not chayvim trumas and maaseros.
That's like, that's all like the...
Oh, okay. We'll get to Shemitah next week. And Hetzer Mechira and Notzer Beis Din. And they bring it through the roof. Oy vey, what they do, they cheat. They think they're cheating. And it's a terrible thing. Again, the Gemara is very unhappy about this. How can people do this? People should be honest. People shouldn't find a workaround and bring it through the roof. It's not okay to do this. It's a terrible thing to do. Also, look at this case of Ribbis. Ribbis is very interesting. Ribbis is a prohibition of lending on interest. So I can't say to somebody, I'll lend you money and you'll pay me back with interest or whatever. So look at this case. Number 32. Tana Rav Safra beribis de Beir Rebchia. So Rav Safra taught about ribis in the Academy of Rebchia and says as follows. Yesh dvarim shehem mutarim. There are certain things that are technically allowed. Va'asurim mipnei ha'aramat ribit. But they're prohibited because it's like a clever, you're being too clever. We're not going to let you do that. Technically, you didn't do anything wrong. But we're not going to allow it because it's like a harama. Kate said, what's an example? Amaloi halveni mana. Someone says, lend me $100. A mana is not a dollar, but let's say $100. So Amaloi says, he says to him, mana ain't me, I don't have any cash. But this is what I'm going to do. Chitin b'mana yeshli sha'ani no tilcha. I'm going to give you $100 worth of wheat. Okay, going to give you $100 worth of wheat. Nasan lo chitim b'mana, he gives him $100 worth of wheat instead of money. V'chazar v'lakchan heimenu, and then a week or two later, when the wheat value in the market has gone down, he buys it from him be'esrim v'arba seller for $96. Meaning, I gave you $100 worth of wheat, but I'm only giving you $96 to get it back. So I made $4. That's technically speaking not ribis, because it's completely different transactions. And the value of wheat went down, meaning if I'd held this wheat in my house, it would also be worth $96. So it's technically not interest. But the Gemara says, Asur la'asot ken, you're not allowed to do this, b'pnei ha'aromas ribis. It smells wrong. You gave him 100, and you only paid 96, he took 100. It's not technically wrong, but it smells wrong. It doesn't feel right. It's ha'aramat ribit. So again, their chazal were unhappy with it. And the last two examples I want to bring you before we look at some of the principles at work here is tumah and tara. The chazal are very, very unhappy about ha'arama when it comes to tumah and tara. Look at the two cases. This is a very interesting case, number 33. This is called a case of soif tumah latsis, which means as follows. Let's see how it works. Hames babayas. Let's say somebody dies lo aleinu in a house, in a block of flats, whatever it is. V'loi pesachim harbe kulam nu'ulim, kulam tameim. If all the doors are closed, then all the doors are tameim. What's going on here? We're going to take out the dead body through one of these doors, but we don't know which one. And therefore Chazal said, all of the doors right now are tameim, because they are going to have potentially a dead body taken through them. Okay, fine. Niftach echad behem, once one of them is opened up, Even though you didn't necessarily plan it, okay, so that's the route. Tiered kulam, then all the other doors are fine. Meaning once you've decided there's a certain door or opened up a certain door, and that's now the designated route, like all week long they've been telling us where Queen Elizabeth's coffin is going. It's going here, then it's going here, then it's going there. It's all
That's all for the Kohanim.
It's all for the Kohanim, correct. Okay, probably not, because there's no Issa oil, because we're a non-Jew, whatever. Well, I'm not getting into that now. Maybe there is. But the point is that once you've designated a route for the mace, then all the other doors are fine. And the Gemara says, that's fine once one door becomes the door that it's all going to be taken. Look at the last case. Second line. Ha'ilo Pesach Echad LeTzafon. He has a door in the north. Hu Pesach Echad LeDromam, and a door in the Darom, in the south. The Chishiv LaHetziyasa B'Tzafon. And he says, you know something? I'm going to take it out through the north door. Okay, that's the door that's Tameh. Everything else is fine. The Achakach Bo Achiv Okroivo, and then his relatives came and said, no, that's not how we're doing the funeral. I'm sorry, we're going out that way, not the way you said. Family politics can be quite difficult in these situations. For Amru Ein Moitzim Oseh Ela B'Droimo. So Tia B'Droimo is at Safoina. Whichever door becomes the final door, it saves all the other doors. But says the Tosefta, Bilvad Shaloi Ya'arim. But don't play games. Don't say, I've chosen this door. And then say, oh, actually, I need to take something through that door. You know something? I've changed my mind. I'm now going to do this door. You can't play games. You can't say, I'm changing my mind. I'm doing it differently to save your doors. The im harem hari elu tamein. And if not, if you try and play games, they're all tamein. Again, no game playing. So too in number 34, it's a case where there's a vessel. A vessel only becomes tameh or susceptible to tumah when you finally finish it. So you can't play games and say, I'm going to finish this, it's just not finished yet, in order to save it from becoming tameh, when really you had no intention of finishing it. It's good enough as it is, but you said, no, I intended to finish it, so it's not actually tameh yet, you can't play games. And all through tumah and tahara, there's no playing games. Negative approach to Ha'arama. And even a midrashic idea, look at this beautiful idea in number 35, where the rabbis express their negativity about Ha'arama and say, look at this midrashic example. Avram says to God, God says, I'm going to destroy Sodom. So Avram says, how can you do that? Chalila lecha, ma'asoyis kedava hazel ahamid tzadikim rasha. How could you kill tzadikim with rashaim? How could you do that? So look what the argument is according to the Medrash. Amar of Acha, Nishbeis va'armat. So Avram says to God, you made a shavua and you said, She'ein ata mevi mabula oilam. You promised after the flood that you weren't going to do this again. There isn't going to be another destruction with tzadikim together with Rashaim. Uma'ata ma'arim ala shavua. You're trying to use a ha'arama? It's astounding. Mabul shel ma'im, ainata maybe you're trying to get around it, God, saying, well, I only meant that I'm not going to bring a mabul shel ma'im, but I never promised that I'm going to bring a mabul shel aish. Meaning, technically, God's saying to Avram, I'm not breaking my oath. Avram says, no, it's playing games. We can't have that. You said you're not going to destroy things. You're not going to destroy them. You're not keeping your promise. Again, this is a midrashic polemic against trying to cheat. Even Avram's saying to God, you can't cheat either. We all know what you meant. You meant you're not going to destroy Tzadikim with Rashaim. You can't say, I only meant water. I didn't mean... So you see here a lot of negativity. It didn't work because there weren't enough Tzadikim. That's the problem. They couldn't even find 10. That's the problem. But in theory, if they'd have found Tzadikim, it would have worked. And there are debatable cases as well. Can you run in and save food from a fire on Shabbat? You can save whatever food you need for Shabbat. They were worried you were going to put out the fire. So can you save bad food on purpose so that you can go back to say better food because you changed your mind? There's all of these cases. There are many, many cases that I didn't bring you. I brought you at the beginning. There is actually a very, very interesting PhD thesis. Ilana Stein-Hain, who I don't know, although I know her family a little bit. Some of you probably know her. She was in Lincoln Square for many years as a scholar there. She wrote her whole PhD thesis on rabbinic legal loopholes, formalism, equity, and subjectivity. It's actually really good. And you can, I'm not surprised it's really good. good, but it's even though it's 300 pages long, it's a bit of a page turner, in my opinion, although that's, I suppose, subjective. But I downloaded it, and I'm kind of two-thirds of the way through it, but she brings loads and loads and loads more cases. I didn't bring you them because I can't do them all today. Let me just look at 39, and then we'll see if we can bring together some rules. 39, and then we'll pull it together. Here's an interesting case where we allow a harama, but only for a Talmud Chacham. We only trust the Talmud Chacham. Look at this, number 39. Amr le Rabban al Ravashi. The rabbi said to Ravashi, Chazi mar hai tzur b'de Rabban, did you beat this young Talmud Chacham? V'Rav Huna ben Rebbe Chiyun Shmei. His name is Rav Huna ben Rebbe Chiyun. V'Amri la Rebbe Huna ben Rebbe Chilvan. Whatever his name was, did you meet this nice young Talmud Chacham? The shakel, these are two things that he did. Shakel brought the tumah. He took a piece of garlic, umanach bebarz adadane, and he put it in the spout of a barrel, and he said, "It's nuyi kamachinva. I'm keeping it there to store it." What's going on here? One of his barrels has started leaking, okay, and he needs to stop it up, and he can't stop it up on Shabbos because it's not, you know, allowed to stop up the pipe. So he says, "You know something? I need somewhere to keep my garlic. That's a great place to keep garlic. I'm just storing my garlic there. Oh, it stops up the barrel? Okay, gamzula tova. That's also as good. That he could do. This Talmud Chacham did that. And another thing that he did, va'azul v'noim b'mabra, he went to sleep on a ferry, on a ferry that crosses a big river, va'ava lehen gisa v'asari peri, and he got over to the other side on Shabbos morning to inspect his fruit on the other side. No, you can't cross the ferry on Shabbos. He said, "What? I just went to sleep. I like sleeping on ferries. It's a thing of mine." Okay. I intended to go to sleep. So amaluhu harama kamaratz. You did a how can you do a harama like this? He went to sleep on Friday night on the ferry, and he woke up on the other side conveniently. He says, no, harama b'drabonon. These are all haramas on b'drabonons, crossing on a ferry or stopping the barrel. V'tzur b'drabonon lo asilamid v'chakel. And we trust the Talmud Chacham. We trust him. He's not going to play with it too much. He's going to stay within the realms of haram, and he's not going to do it on purpose, as it were. Okay, what have we said all of the last 40 minutes? We've had case after case after case after case. So I listed them here for you on page number 8. These are cases that we've had. There are a number of post Talmudic haramas, which became very famous. Selling chometz. Is that a real thing? Is that a harama? We'll talk a little bit more about that next week. Heta iska. You can sign a deal with a bank that you can now pay interest or receive interest. That's okay. How does that make it okay? Leasing an animal to a non-Jew for Shabbos by declaring it hefker. Normally I can't let a non-Jew use my animals on Shabbos. He can't work my animals on Shabbos. Oh, I'm going to make it a hefker. Apparently that works. Business partnerships with non-Jews, this is very common. You go into business with a non-Jew, and the shops open on Shabbos. So you enter into an agreement, I've drafted these agreements, where all the profits for Shabbos go to the non-Jewish partner, and the Jewish partner doesn't get any benefit from Shabbos. Is that like real? Yeah, it's a real deal, but is that a workaround? Is that a haroma? And maybe some modern examples, Heta Mechira, we're going to talk about next week a little bit, Eitzah Beis Din, and Groma using these electrical things on Shabbos, someone already mentioned that. So let's see if we can find maybe a few ways to try and understand this. And none of these are going to be perfect, which is why next week we're going to take a deeper dive and try and look, well, what is the spirit of the law? Do we believe in such a thing? Are we stricter with Torah cases or stricter with rabbinic cases? Both and both. You would have thought we're stricter with the Torah, but no, it's not true. Look at the things we allowed. I've listed them here. The permitted haramas were the bechor, that's Torah. The maaseh sheni, that's Torah. The mother and the cow and the saltini were the rabbonon. So, you know, some are d'oraisa, some are d'rabbonon. What were the prohibited ones? Some were d'oraisa, some were d'rabbonon. Look at the Eruv case. I never mentioned the Eruv case. The Eruv case was the strictest. And that's a pure d'rabbonon. So you can't necessarily say that we're stricter with Torah and we're less strict with the rabbinic cases. On the contrary, you actually might think that you should be more strict with the rabbinic cases. Why? Because people treat them lightly. People don't take them seriously. And very often the Gemara says the rabbonon cases need chizuk. They need more, you know, support. We're often stricter with the rabbinic cases because people play fast and loose. And I know this as a teacher. Sometimes to my younger students, I say the word drabonon, and I can see in their mind they're thinking optional, you know, rather than drabonon. But you know, it's a tendency. It's a yetzer hara to do that. You might also make an argument that there can be no such thing as a loophole in a Torah case. If God left this open, then He left it open because He's perfect and He wants it to be open. But you might run the argument, if I find a loophole in a rabbinic case, well, maybe they didn't mean to leave this open. You couldn't, because then they're fallible. The rabbis are not God. So you could argue again, you could be stricter in a Drabonon case, and we'll get a little bit back to that next week. The Rosh, helpfully, but actually not so helpfully, just tells us in number 40, you know something? Every case is different. Some cases it's allowed, some cases it's not allowed, some cases it's allowed with a haroma, sometimes it's allowed for a time with chochem. Every case is different. Okay, shkoyach. I mean, true. I think we've worked that. There's no obvious, clear-cut rules as to when yes and when no. We are going to keep looking for them. One rule that the Rashba gives, which I mentioned with Erev, is it makes a difference whether you're negligent or not. Meaning, in the case of the Erev, we're not going to let you play games because it's just your fault. You should have been more on the ball. But in the case of the salting of the meat, and other cases, it's not your fault. Your cows fell down on a pit on Shabbos, that's not your fault. You know, you're having a bechor, that's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. So maybe in a case where it's your fault or you should have tried harder, then there's going to be more likelihood that we're going to say it's not okay. Oh, it's not fresh. I want fresh meat. We don't think like this. Yeah. You know, I went to a wedding in Bat Ayin recently, and once I already say I went to a wedding Bat Ayin, you're already extrapolating what that was. And the meat looked, it was amazing, delicious, amazing. And someone asked me, you know, what's the hashgacha? So I said, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, it's better to ask about the hashgacha before you eat the meat, usually. I went around and asked, and I said, it's that guy over there. He's roasting the meat. So I went to the guy, and I said, you know, where's the meat from? He said, I shechted it all this afternoon. Beautiful, I hope. Okay, but the point is, it's fresh. It tastes different fresh. We don't use it. When did the last time you ate, you know, something? You know, fish as well. You know, people go fishing. It's not the same if it's been in the freezer for 3 weeks or whatever. Fine. So maybe negligence versus innocence. Mitzvah counter pressure. This is very important, and I think this is a rule that we've seen. Where there is a real downside, a mitzvah downside, if I don't use the haroma, then we may be able to use the haroma. We don't want bechor animals running round the house, running round the farm. We don't want that. Prosbul. We're doing it for a really good reason. We're doing it to help the poor. We're not doing it because it's more convenient. In the case of Tuma and Tara, oh, it's inconvenient for me to have this vessel to be tame, or for this door to be tame. Okay, it's inconvenient. Sometimes life is inconvenient. As opposed to the cases where, no, it's actually, there's a real counter pressure, there's a real downside, and we actually don't want this to happen. Is there a difference between Bein Adam L'Chaver and Bein Adam L'Makom? Just look on the top of page 10. This is very interesting. So, actually, one of the things that I saw Rav Rosen, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, from Tzomet, points out that we never allow a ha'aroma with a real Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. Meaning, if you're going to say, like this, with a ha'aroma, and be proud of it, and it's okay, it's only allowed between you and God. Meaning, we never turn around and said, yes, I hurt this person, but I technically didn't hurt him. It wasn't osa. I'll give you some examples. Number 43. Amar Reish Lakish. Hamagbi yadu al chaveru. If someone lifts their hand as if to strike somebody, afal pi shelo hikau, even though he didn't hit them, nikra rosha. It's called a rosha. Well, I didn't hit anyone. Where does it say in the Torah you're not allowed to lift up your hand as if you're about to hit someone? You can't get me on that. The answer is, you're a rosha. Well, that's right. He brings the case. But, okay, that's nice. That's future. But that... That, but that's before Har Sinai as well. Can you bring that? You know, whatever. But it, you can't get away with that and say, well, I technically didn't hit him. You're a Rosha. Number 44. Afmisha hayu meiz panav. Someone who's arrogant. Nikra Rosha. It's called a Rosha. Even if someone gets angry against somebody, he didn't do it. It's called a Rosha. Number 45. Ani mahapich b'charara. A poor person is going to buy a loaf of bread and they don't have much money. Uba'achev anakle menu. And someone else says, you know, I'll have that bread. Thanks very much. I'll give you more money for it. He gazumps him, if that's the word. You know, say that in English? In England? You know, whatever. You make a higher offer, you... Nikra Rosha! You're Rosha! You can't say, well, it's a haroma. It's like, I didn't really steal anything. I just bought it. Okay, he was interested, and I bought ahead of him. No, you're a Rosha. I'm sorry. You can't do that. And look at the Rambam in 46. Ha'aisa shliach l'kadish lo isha. You make a shliach to be makadish a woman for you. You send this guy and say, please make this woman my wife. You give her the money, etc. V'halach v'kitcha l'asma, and he marries her himself. Okay? Not such a good shliach. Hari is a mukadesh is l'shliach. But she's married to the shliach. The asal asas came, but you're not allowed to do that. Why not? Technically, nothing wrong. You know, I decided to marry myself. Anyone who acts in this way, not just in Kiddushin, with any other business dealing with any other person, they did something which is technically not wrong, but come on, what are you thinking? Nikra Rasha, you're called a Rasha. So Rav Rezin makes the point that none of these haromas are trying to allow you to get away with a situation between Bein Adam and Chaveiro. The others have extenuating circumstances, etc. There's lots more to talk about. Also, just finally, on that bottom of page 11, I'm not going to go through all the sources, clearly when other people are going to learn negative behavior, it's going to be a Chilul Hashem, then that's going to be more of a problem. And the Rambam says, look at this last Rambam. Matilim, this is an example we didn't talk about. Can you make beer on Chol HaMoed? You ever made beer on Chol HaMoed? I've never made beer on Chol HaMoed. Maybe it means liquor, whatever. Matilim Shecha B'moed L'Tzarech HaMoed. You can make whatever you need for the Moed. Shelo L'Tzarech HaMoed Asa. But if it's for later, you can't do it on Chol HaMoed. The Afal Pi Sheyesh Lo Yashan. Even though you've got beer in the fridge, you've got old stuff. Marim, you can do a Haroma. V'Shoytei Min HaChadosh. And you can say, I need new beer because I like new beer better. She'ain ha'aromazun nikeret l'roi, because that's not going to look bad to other people. V'chein kol kiyotzi b'zeh, anything else like this, if it's going to give off the wrong vibe, then that's already a negative issue. So what have we achieved today? That's a good question, actually. What have we achieved today? We've seen a lot of cases of haroma. Some of them are allowed, some of them are not allowed. We try to find some ways to define when is it yes allowed, when is it not allowed. But really, so far as I'm concerned, ikka chasam in a sefer, we haven't really dealt with the key issue, which is, what is the spirit of the law? How do I know what the spirit of the law is? How do I know what God wants? Oh, God would... I get very irritated when rabbis talk in the name of God. God wouldn't like it if you did that. How do you know?
Reason why this and this happened is because...
Oh, you don't even get me started on all of that. And if it says in the law, God revealed his law, and it says this is okay, then that's the best indicator of what God wants, no? Or not. And we'll get into that. We'll look at that in more detail next week, and we'll look at Tekiah Shofar, and actually that becomes a very important philosophical idea as well. But you need this information this week, even though it's quite technical, because you need to use all of these cases to challenge me next week when you say, well, how does that work because of this? Okay, so next week we'll see you again, please God, and we'll take you to the next stage.